The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Spencer Hager and Cole Hammack. On deck today is a discussion about smart investment strategies for small business owners. We've talked a lot about entrepreneurship and financial planning conversations that go with it, but we haven't really gotten into the investment aspect of the conversation. This is way over my head, so I'm going to be using a cheat sheet. but it is interesting to me because, you know, as we have gone through COVID, there have been a lot of pop-ups, a lot of small businesses that have come out of COVID, everything ranging from, you know, boutiques to dog walkers to consultants. I think that's really, you can drive downtown and see some of the big office buildings are, you know, kind of empty.
Yeah.
And people are working from home and opening LLCs.
Well, that side hustle life.
Yeah, right? So investing in that environment, I would think, would be quite a challenge. I guess, you know, it's relative. If you don't have a lot of overhead, probably not. But let's say you do. I want to get into those conversations. We're going to kind of start with the foundational stuff. You know, Spencer, you and I were talking about this before. I definitely don't want to miss out on the financial planning part of small business ownership. So I'm going to hit those bullet points first, and then we're going to get into the investment aspects of it. So
sounds good.
Want to help people become more independent while they're still building their small business. So balancing business reinvestment with personal financial goals is the first conversation. So if a client's torn between using their profits to expand their businesses or contributing more toward personal investments, how do you help them prioritize like their expansion needs and the everyday aspect of running their business with their long-term financial goals like retirement or even family needs?
Yeah, I'd start with, again, everything's case-by-case specific, but I would say diversification. Like, it depends how concentrated your wealth is in the business that you're starting. So if you're someone where you're early on in this business you're starting is pretty much your entire plan, right? A lot of your assets are tied into it. A lot of your investment isn't in, like, a traditional 401k or an IRA. You're just throwing it all into the business. You know, you obviously have to get up and running. You have to reinvest in the business to scale. But I almost look at it like debt repayment. Like sometimes really debt-averse people just always need to get the debt off before they put something into savings. I'm not talking cash in the bank, something for retirement long-term. And sometimes I have to pull those people back and say, like, yes, I'm with you. Let's repay debt. But you can't always be chasing your tail. You have to put something into the savings bucket. And I'd say same thing with the business. If you're constantly just reinvesting more capital, that's fine. I won't tell you how to run your business, but just know that if there's a huge disruption with the business, everything's in that bucket. And so that's when I'll kind of push diversify.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. So not to be pessimistic, but I was actually looking at stats. So like what are the percentage that a small business fails within certain periods of time? And I think it was something like 20% fail within the first 2 years. 50% fail within the first 5, 65% within the first 10, and it's only something like 20% of businesses, small businesses, last beyond 15 years.
Is that based on industry? I'm wondering.
That's just holistic. So it could be any, it's kind of like the average. So 1 in 5 businesses are going to actually make it past 15 years. So the idea is if you're just focusing on that business, putting everything into that business, and that's not to say you shouldn't or shouldn't blend it, but if you're neglecting the everything else, if that 15 years comes up and we're shutting up shop, we have nothing else to show for it at that point. So we do have to figure out what that blend is and take advantage of other tools they have along the way.
How do you help people decipher through those priorities? I mean, if you've got a sole prop that is sitting in front of you that is really excited about getting started and doesn't have a whole lot of isn't flush with cash, doesn't have a lot of cash coming in, and is still in a situation where they don't have their retirement padded significantly enough. How do you Do you just kind of crunch numbers? How do you talk them through that? Is that all emotional?
Well, I mean, a lot of it's emotional because that's what generally drives a lot of those sole props. It's usually that passion project, right? Whether it's the small Etsy shop or whether you've always loved baking, so you set up a bakery kind of thing. Your heart and soul is really going into it. So you do have to kind of walk people back, I think, in certain cases to say, okay, well, we understand that this is important, but how can we maybe blend this or make this supplement what we're already doing? Versus giving up everything and moving into that. Because sometimes people think, okay, well, I want to do this. I want to put everything into it. I'm going to invest in myself. Walk away from that W-2 position maybe. But then they're giving up health insurance. Right. They're giving up disability, life insurance, all those goodies that come with that W-2. So I think maybe that first place is let's just slow down, figure out where you want to go. We don't have to get up to scale immediately. Just how can we blend that in with the time that we're already putting in? So that way we're not losing everything, basically starting fresh.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's two kind of emotional parts, I would say. Like, I think most people, to like Cole's point about just putting your heart and soul into it, like, I think most people just intrinsically, if you're a small business owner, you trust yourself. And yeah. I think it kind of drives a lot of them crazy, like the idea that I'm letting someone else manage my money, whether it's in an investment account or someone doing it directly. Mm-hmm. They feel like their hands are off the reins, and that really bothers them. I think the other one is, like, you hear with real estate a lot, too. Like, well, I'm putting money in, back in to build the cash flow because I love cash flow and it hits the bank. And they view a 401k that they can't touch until they're in their 50s or like an IRA, same deal. Well, that's not cash flow because it doesn't hit my bank account. And so that's something I really have to, I feel like we all drive home a lot with people is it is building cash flow. It just doesn't hit your bank account. And so while it's important to do that with the business, appreciate that these other things while you're diversifying are building cash flow. It's just deferred a little while until mm-hmm. you should touch it.
So get the foundational stuff taken care of in the personal side first, get the debt paid off, make sure you have some cash flow on your personal life so that you don't tap into your investments in order to increase your business and run your business. Oh, yeah. So if somebody's starting behind the eight ball on retirement planning, how do they first, and maybe we can just kind of run through some of the tools that they can tap into when they first start out to get started.
For small business owners.
Yeah, are you thinking retirement plan specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so a lot of it depends on what we're talking about as far as your capacity to save. So there's three great options traditionally, and there's even four when you're thinking just from the personal level. So if you don't want to get fancy, at least make sure you're taking advantage of a personal IRA, because you can set those up whether you're a business owner or not. So it's an easy thing to set up. Any custodian has it. There's limits just based on the year. But if you have the capacity to save a little bit more, maybe we want to save in taxes, maybe we want to create some tax diversity, there's three good tools for business owners. And then some a little bit more complex, but at least the traditional tools would be your simple IRA. If you have a capacity to save something like $13,000, $14,000 a year, so not going overboard, just say we can throw in a little bit. It's simple. It's easy to put together. There's a SEP IRA, which, Spencer, I'll let you talk through that one because that one's
Let's not. Yeah. If you would go back, let's
going to rattle.
I don't want to talk in acronyms. Let's tell people what the acronym stands for while we're using the acronym.
We're talking about the simple IRA?
Simple,
yeah. I couldn't tell you what that stands for.
That one I don't remember. The SEP IRA, it's simplified.
It's self-employed pension.
Yeah, I always think simplified. Yeah, cool. Self-employed pension. That one, again, that's... That one's really easy to set up too. That one's more tied to how much profit you have. You can technically put like 60, almost 70,000 mm-hmm. into that one if you want. I think it's 69,000, but it's 25%, or honestly, it's a slightly different percentage when you get into the weeds of whatever your profit is, bottom line.
I like that you're giving some numbers for people to kind of give some contextualization.
Yeah, so like, yeah, the numbers would be, to Cole's point, like this year in 2024, if it's just a personal IRA, you can only put in 7,000 unless you're older than 50, then you can put in 8. I think the simple is like 16,000, and then you can do a little bit on top. Yeah. So like same deal, if you want to put in 12, the personal IRA is probably not going to do it for you. SEP just depends on how much income you have. And then a 401k, whether it's you doing it for your own business or you have it as a W-2 employee, again, if you're under 50 this year, it's 23 grand. So there's some different considerations with each one of those, but to Cole's point about savings capacity, that's the big piece.
Okay. And the 401k is pretty cool, though, too, on the solo 401k side, because you can contribute as the employee and the employer, whereas just with a W-2 individual, you're an employee, right? It's just simple. It's that 23K, but... being able to contribute as the employer, you can do matching, you can do profit sharing. So like the SEP IRA, you can also get up to $69,000, $70,000 in a solo 401k as well.
That's if you have the extra cash in the business to do that.
If you have the capacity to save And you also have the flexibility on whether it's pre-tax contributions, Roth contributions, or after-tax in that solo 401k, which SEP is just pre-tax, simple is just pre-tax. So you get some flexibility there, too.
Is the traditional IRA max the same as the Roth?
Yeah.
Seven?
Yep.
7,000?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a simple IRA.
You can't double dip, though. So it's one or the other. You can't do seven in a traditional and seven in a Roth.
I didn't know that.
You can do a hybrid of the two, depending on your income, or mm-hmm. pick one over mm-hmm. the other, but you can't double up.
Okay. Simple IRA is savings incentive match plan for employees.
There you go.
Never in a million years would I have gotten that.
You're welcome.
I don't even think I would have guessed the S. So.
I made my contribution for the day. My CFP contribution.
You can have my
thank
job.
You, Tracy.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
You'll sit in the middle of the table next time.
I'll take my own. Thank you very much. All right. Building passive income streams. So if a new business owner wants to diversify their income, but they're hesitant to just kind of step outside of the new business, which I can imagine would be kind of scary. You've got home life, new business. Now you need extra cash, so you're thinking about taking another job somewhere else to make some extra money. How hard is it to create a system so that you don't have to rely on your business income?
I think to make it scalable and reliable, probably pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the sense, I mean, we only have so much time. Right. So if we're trying to blend, okay, well, we have the business that we're currently doing. We want to make sure we're spending time with family. Generally, people are looking for, okay, well, what can we generate from a passive standpoint where we don't have to be boots on the ground all the time? So I think most people, when you bring that up, their brains are going to think, okay, well, how can I get into real estate, which isn't always what it's cracked up to be. I mean, there's a lot of risk in that, especially if you want to try to be the property manager for it. You're the one getting the phone calls at 2:00 in the morning to say, hey, you know, the toilet stopped working or the AC stopped. So there's a lot of stress that comes into that, too. So it's not fully passive in the sense that I think a lot of people think it is. So there's not really a perfect one outside of maybe, Spencer, to your point, that deferred passive income by way of just saving into
retirement plans.
Why do they call
it passive? Why is it passive?
Passive in the sense that generally you don't have to do something.
Because so you're making money while you sleep, Tracy.
It's really that easy.
Okay. So what are some other examples of passive income streams?
I think Cole hit, I mean, real estate's a big one, mm-hmm. just putting money into like an IRA or 401k because it's making dividends, maybe interest.
Oh, so your passive income stream can actually be your investment tools.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But people, they don't get excited about that.
Yeah.
Right? That's not usually where people's heads go, which we'd like to change that.
Yeah, I mean, and then like you could technically do another business, right? But again, like there's not really much on our side of the table that we can say about that other than if you find a good business opportunity and it's diversifying, great. But that's, again, so much time in the day. Most people mm-hmm. don't do that. And then going back to the real estate, like some people will they're operating a business and then they'll buy the business or the building that they operate out of. But that's, mm-hmm. it's kind of a long-term play. And again, there's a huge cash flow position for that. Yep. So there's a lot.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of I never.
That's like step 20 in the business plan.
That's pretty cool.
Then it's just as easy as just buying cars and renting those out on Turo now, right? We just
Airbnb.
That's a thing. Yeah, I mean,
you open up one of your bedrooms, right?
Yeah, I can't imagine doing that, but sure, you
can. No, I can't either. What about somebody who's facing high tax liabilities? They've got increased business profits, and they're seeking ways to invest more efficiently. How do business owners invest to kind of cut down on taxes but get the most return? Any best practices?
Yeah,
for
I can
that?
Start with that. I feel like we already beat up the retirement plans pretty heavily. That's a pretty basic one, right? If you set that up and you're doing pre-tax money into like a solo 401k, you get a write-off. Again, depending on the type of business, like if you need capital to operate the business, like I'm talking equipment, machinery, things like that. I mean, even if you're endodontist or something like that and you own your own business, they have, you know, lots of tools they need to invest in to make the business more efficient. If you have a really high profit year and you know you need some of that equipment, right, you could do that, maybe depreciate it against the income. But again, that usually it's something you needed anyway, and it's a high profit year, so do it to take the write-off and offset it. I'd say those are the main two I usually start with.
Yeah, and I think for people kind of in the end game, if you will, how can we save as much as possible? How can we reduce our tax liability as much as possible? You got to talk fancy pension plans.
Yeah.
Which generally, again, it requires a hefty amount you're willing and able to consistently invest because there's testing for it. You have to maintain contributions for it. It's not like a 401k where just, okay, well, this year I'm not feeling it. You have to. Otherwise, the pension plan can dissolve. But if you have the profit for it, I mean, you can save like $200,000 a year.
Yeah,
I think,
depending
into
on the age,
if you're maxing it out. So That's a very powerful way to save if you have the cash flow to allow for it.
And if that sounds complex, there's not really a good way to simplify it.
It really is.
Well, then I won't say I don't understand. I'll just nod and smile and we'll move to the next point. Risk management and diversification. So when the market's down, and you know, it's, we deal with a lot of questions when that happens. What does it mean to diversify investments outside of the business in order to protect wealth?
I mean, you could just talk about any investment podcast that we've done so far.
Yeah.
It's just don't invest it maybe all in the market. I know maybe some people where if you're a very market-based, what's the market doing is going to determine how my business is doing. Well, then your personal investments, maybe you invest a little bit more conservatively or something that is inverse to the market. So that way things aren't going down together. So there's a way you could operate it that way. Or we understand that there's cycles, there's going to be business interruptions periodically. Hopefully we have business interruption insurance to account for that. I know the people that had that during COVID, thinking they're lucky stars.
Business
that
interruption insurance.
Yeah, so if basically the operational aspects of your business are interrupted by something out of your control, this basically helps pay for overhead.
How is that different? Maybe it's not. That's a dumb question. I'm not going to ask that.
I'll let you ask it then.
No, I mean, my brain immediately thought about disability. I guess it's the equivalent, the non-medical equivalent of disability, sort of?
It's basically if your business is disabled. It's not you specifically.
Right.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it'd be kind of a way to offset it there, still have that income come in, protect the business. As that way, maybe your other investments, we can feel more comfortable with those being aggressive. So I don't know that there's necessarily a you have to offset risk with other investments. It's just, do you have a plan with everything going on?
So that's on the side of protecting what you have more so than investing.
Yeah, and keep some personal cash in the bank. Like, again, going to not redeploying everything back into the business. Just keep something on the side in addition to the insurances and your portfolio. Because ideally, if there's a downturn in the market and your business is taking a hit, you're not having to go into mission critical reaction mode, because I feel like that's when you run into trouble, because your emotion comes in and you're feel like your back's against the
wall. Especially
if you
have employees.
Yeah.
So is there a percentage people should keep in tow?
I've heard people should have at least 1 year in a reserve as a business owner. If you have employees, you have
payroll. Business expenses.
Absolutely.
Everything. Okay.
So if you need to make sure the people are paid, there's no reason not to have 1 year as a reserve for the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of businesses during COVID, some restaurants that were releasing their serving staff and not paying them, couldn't pay them. And then I know one restaurant chain that told people, don't go work for somebody else or you won't be able to come back.
Yeah.
So they weren't prepared on either way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were. Even outside of COVID, right? I mean, just ride the business cycle. When a lot of those business owners, their performance, you know, does fluctuate pretty heavily with the business cycle. When things are good, credit's easy, people have money to spend, business does great, things tighten, layoffs increase, unemployment rates going up. A lot of those businesses feel that as well. So it doesn't have to be like the crazy, oh, COVID, everything shut down. It could just be we're heading into a soft recession and things are going to, you're going to feel a tightening.
Yeah, the only industry I feel like that doesn't hit is the bar industry. I feel like that's insulated.
I wonder why that is.
Okay, so let's hit some of the high-level conversations. What are some of the ways that high-income business owners can explore investment strategies to optimize their wealth management? I've got a list of things here. So I'm going to read it off to you, and I think we've talked about this, but whatever you haven't hit, let's hit. Tax-advantaged retirement accounts.
I think we've hit everything on that one. I think Colin, when he said the pension, that was probably the last one.
Yeah. Simple SEP, solo 401k, pension, and maybe IRAs, taking advantage of those too.
So maximize your contributions if you can.
Got it.
Yeah.
Diversified investment portfolios. So this says building a mix of stocks, bonds, real estate, and alternative investments to spread risk and enhance returns.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I feel fine with it.
You should do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel good about it. Yeah, the stocks and bonds piece, I think that, again, comes down to age, what your income threshold is, and how close you are to retirement. So that one's kind of basic, and you'll hear, we've talked about that a million times, to Cole's point, on other podcasts. Alternatives, we've already touched on one, real estate, precious metals. That's more like a qualitative thing for people. I'm not huge on it. And then some of those other ones, like when you say alternatives, talking about like private equity and venture capital, similar to real estate, like you need really heavy, usually really high introductory cost to get in on those. So those is just how much do you have saved and can you afford to have that kind of exposure? And then like if you're a business owner or anyone really with high income and you've got like some short-term goals over the next 3 to 5 years, you can talk about like muni bonds, municipal bonds, because those they're like any bonds, but if you invest into them, the interest that it pays is
those are more tax efficient. Yeah. Municipal bonds.
Yeah, you got it.
That could be like a part of the diversification if you're a high income business owner, because it pays you interest and it's not taxed federally. And if you buy them in your state, they're not taxed on the state level either.
And I'm thinking one more thing to add just from a diversification standpoint. So we talked about a lot of the fancy like retirement plans, but we didn't really get into a brokerage account, which I think for a lot of business owners can be crucial. Because in a lot of cases, they may have large capital calls for something they need to do, or they're expanding their practice and they're just tight on capital right now. So where the alternative may be taking out this massive loan, whether it's on the personal side, like a home equity line of credit or a small business loan, this would be a way that you can leverage the portfolio that you've already built before you're 55, mm-hmm. like in a 401k or 59 and a half in an IRA. There's no age restrictions on being able to access that brokerage account. So that would just give you a lot more flexibility, too, if you're in your 30s, if you're in your 40s, or even early 50s, when we need access to capital maybe beyond what we have, but we don't want to deal with the debt side of it, mm-hmm. too. So the drawback is, yeah, you pay capital gains taxes, but it sure does beat ordinary income, and at least it's growing in the market along the way, too.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about real estate investments. Let's kind of go through what those look like, give examples of the different real estate investments that are out there.
Yeah, so I mean, there's millions of options. It's kind of just
the obvious renting rental
obvious.
Properties.
Your single family homes, your multifamily homes, or you buy an apartment building kind of thing. All right, so we're basically housing people, but you can expand beyond that to diversify the risk. Whether it's healthcare buildings, so you can invest in medical offices, you can invest in self storage, you can invest in one of the newer ones I've seen is RV parks. So there's pretty much anything that. Has any form of building on it, you can probably invest in that to some capacity.
Explain what a real estate investment trust is.
REITs.
Yeah, I mean, a basic breakdown.
REIT.
Yeah, real estate investment trust, yeah.
Yeah.
I would, basic way of describing it, I say it's pretty much like a mutual fund for real estate exposure, right? Mm-hmm. And when I say mutual fund, right, think of like an index fund. So
those better for high income earners?
No, I'd say it's better for people who don't have much to invest to begin with. Like the high income earners, high net worth people, I don't see going to REITs because
they prefer direct exposure.
Right, exactly. REITs, you're pretty much a blind pool of capital. Like you could put your money into, you name it, like a BlackRock REIT, a Vanguard REIT. Do you technically have real estate exposure? Yes. Is BlackRock or Vanguard reaching out to you to say, hey, you ex investor, we're taking your $3,000 investment and deploying it this way? No. And so it's good for people that don't have much to invest or don't have a super high net worth because the minimums are really low and you don't have to have a super high net worth to do it. Downside is you pretty much lack any autonomy whatsoever with it. So not big on it.
And was there a drawback specifically for REITs? I'll be honest, I don't recall. I think there's some sort of like payout that they're required to do or something. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
No, I think it depends on how the REIT's structured. But to me, it's more on just the lack of autonomy and transparency. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I will say that, though. You can get some like private REITs that are different from the ones I'm talking about where they're publicly traded. But again, that is for high net worth,
high income.
Where
do people find those?
You go straight to the source of whoever the company is, right? Like Blackstone has massive privately owned REITs. And when you hear people talking about private equity groups coming in and buying residential real estate, you see capital mm-hmm. group signs all around the place.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Those are more private. So you're not, you know, most of the time it is. So you aren't going on to the stock exchange or looking up a ticker symbol. They're going to have their own requirements on who they let in. And again, transparency may not be better, but it's, you know, higher barriers to get in.
Okay. In my research, it talks about asset protection. So using legal structures like trusts and or limited liability companies, LLCs.
Nice.
To protect personal and business assets. What does ye say about this?
I mean, agreed 100%. I think, and depending on what you're doing, in many cases, maybe you can get away with doing something as simple as a sole proprietorship, right? Mm-hmm. Just keep it simple. But if there's any way that someone can look at you and say, you did something wrong, having that LLC to create that delineation between you, the individual, and you, the business owner, there's no reason not to do that.
So a personal umbrella policy is not enough, usually?
I mean, to a certain degree, it could be, but they don't always extend to business activities.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to understand the terms of your specific policy, and is it really worth the risk of having that come through the personal side? Probably not.
Yeah, I would just say, and I feel like a lot of people hear LLC and it sounds intimidating if you're not already doing it. It's not that tough to do it, to set one up. It's really cheap, file it with the state, and then just keep it separate just for peace of mind.
Yeah, so separate bank account in the LLC's name, separate if it's a credit card or just paying with the business debit card, whatever. Just create as many barriers between you and that entity as possible.
And pay yourself consistently, like a salary, so there's a paper trail.
Depends on the entity type. I think that would be a different show.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. Charitable giving. Is it possible for businesses to charitably give?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
How does that work?
They want to give.
On the investment side.
It doesn't have to be an investment. I mean, you can gift product, you can gift equipment, you can gift cash, so anything that you have depending on how you operate,
Aren't there investment tools that are charitable investment tools?
That's more so at the individual level, okay. less so at the entity.
Okay. What are those called?
Donor advice fund.
That's what I had in my head. So those are not for businesses, those are for people.
Great. I mean, conceivably, you might be able to do it with the business, but probably just gift cash at that point.
Yeah.
All right. The bottom line is seek the professional advice, work with your financial planner, your certified financial planner, your fee-only certified financial planner. That's it for today. Thanks for joining us. We'll hope you'll catch us on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.